Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, if you've been listening in, you know the past several programs we've been talking about an optimistic outlook on life, both the present and the future, and we continue on the subject of happiness in life today. But let me start by asking you a question. Do you believe it will take a lot of effort and require a long, tedious process to make a permanent positive change in your life? Not necessarily so, says my guest today, Alan Baseberg. In fact, he claims you can make dramatic transformation in all areas of your life in a mere 8 hours. And he's here to introduce you to a simple yet highly effective program to recalibrate your life with setting it on happy. And Alan Baseberg was a highly successful entrepreneur in the IT consulting industry, built several multi-million dollar businesses, but he suffered from a nagging sense of non-fulfillment. Does that sound familiar? To a lot of us, it does. But he did something about it. He got off the fast track to pursue the life of his dreams and to bring other people along and find his soul's true purpose. And he currently is founder of the School of Human Potential, a best-selling author, speaker, poet, lyricist, and intuitive. And he's author of a new book of his own poetry, Inspirer, and host of the popular syndicated radio program, School of Human Potential. And hello, Alan, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, Roy. Thank you so much for having me on.
Why do you think most of us at middle age in Western society are convinced it takes so much effort to change our life-controlling emotions from negative to positive? Why does the task appear so daunting?
Well, it's because we've been taught to believe that that's the case. That's one. And then we see so many people who lead us to believe that that indeed is the case. But it's not. And you really do have control over your emotions and over anything in life that you choose to do. And I'm not talking about, you know, ridiculous things. And if you want to start flying all on your own, you know, there are some ways of doing that, but none that we would advertise.
No. So I thought next week I might like to become a physician. You mean I can't do that?
You certainly could. I think it takes staying at the Holiday Inn Express the night before. I think that's the way that. Talking from the normal perspective and yeah. Things that we're used to. In fact, we do have a lot of control over how we react to things that are in our circumstance. And if we remove a lot of the negativity from the outside and some of the internal chatter that tells us we cannot do something, yeah. And you actually go out and you try and you open up your mind at least to allow for the possibility of it happening, you'll be very much surprised as how easily things come into your world.
You know, when we were little kids, we used to do that. We believed we could do practically anything, and then mm-hmm. our parents or some teacher or somebody somewhere implanted the idea that, no, your skills are limited. You can't accomplish all those things, and it's really a shame because they get embedded down in the interior yeah. subconscious, and you
it's
keep
true.
Holding you back.
It's true. It's so easy. Again, I'm coming from the IT perspective. If I turn on my left brain for a moment, we're all programmable devices. That's really who we are.
Yeah.
And you either take the programming from yourself or you take the programming from the outside.
Yeah.
But you're still ready to be programmed.
Yeah,
so
right.
if you choose to be programmed by people who are saying you cannot do something and then you actually agree with that opinion, then, yeah, you're writing your own history.
Well, what is the key to personal fulfillment that's overlooked by most people? And what is it we are missing that keeps us bogged down in our present rut?
Well, again, one of them we just touched upon is the ability or the ability to disbelieve that you can actually change your life for the better.
Yeah.
But the thing in terms of personal fulfillment, people usually start equating that with dollars. You know,
yeah,
am I going to
sure.
be happy if I have this much money
yeah.
and only if I have this much money or this particular car or this house or my wife was a few years younger. All of these little things we start playing with. And
yeah, the old if-onlys in life are very devastating.
Yeah, that's not what it's about. As soon as you understand that the personal fulfillment has a direct relationship to actually personal, and that means how you feel about yourself.
Yeah,
and if you are happy with yourself, then everything else starts being rosy.
Yeah, and not only are there the if-onlys, there are the what-ifs. What if I'd only been born with taller, or what if I were better looking, or what if I'd finished college years ago, or there's all these what-ifs that you can use as an excuse to not change your life, and that's so pointless to go back at something you can't change that happened in the past and say, well, if I hadn't done this, I had been born this way, I could have been such and such. That's so pointless.
Yeah, because, again, you really are in control. You know, there are circumstances outside of our control, and we control the reaction to them.
Yeah.
But you really are in control. It doesn't really matter, you know, where you've been, how you grew up, who told you what.
Yeah.
Whatever you decide, that's what you can make happen.
Yeah.
And if we look at the successful people, or quote-unquote success, because that's another definition we need to reevaluate. But if you look at the people who have, let's say, accomplished something that you aspire, these are the people who didn't believe the ones around them who said that you cannot do this. They just went out and did it. So that relates to everything in life.
Yeah. Well, let's say I want to follow your advice, and I'll take 8 hours off next weekend to make a dramatic transformation to all areas of my life. How do I accomplish this, and where do I start?
I would say wait a couple of weeks, and the reason for that is the School of Human Potential is launching in a couple of weeks, and that's where you can do that. What we did with the 8 hours, we actually set out, before creating the School of Human Potential, we set out and asked people questions of all sorts, and the usual answers that we heard, no, I can't invest in myself because I don't have the time or money.
Yeah.
And we tried to eliminate those two basic excuses. And what we basically did is we reached out to experts from all over the world, and we asked them to take their wealth of knowledge in different areas and condense it into something that's going to take less than 8 hours. And then we are making that available via audio and video presentations for people at $97 a pop.
Yeah,
so,
we can talk about a little bit more about that later. But, you know, when you think about all these excuses, I just don't have the time. I bet if you could give up a few television programs during the week.
And all of a sudden you'd have all the time. Yeah, I know. I would be part and parcel to that myself, as much as I enjoy television.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you indicate it's never too late to change careers.
Yeah.
But in the first place, how do you identify a job or vocation that would be, quote, perfect for you, something you really want to do? And second, how do you go about changing the career to one you cherish without giving up everything you've worked for up to now? That's another challenge that I would see.
Yeah, and there are a couple of things that you can do. And if you like, we have a 7-step program on how you can actually successfully do your career change. But in terms of how do you define what's right for you, I think the first thing that you need to do is define who are you in the first place.
That's a good point. You better know who you are before you define what you should be doing.
Yeah, and there are exercises that you can do that will guide you through it. Again, there are all sorts of psychological tips and techniques. But what I do is I basically have people write down a couple of lists. And I say write down a list of all the things that you do for the past month. And, we're not including sleeping, breathing, that type of thing. But all the things that you do in terms of time allocation for your work, any other priorities, and then write up a second list. And that second list, make it, imagine a target. So not target as in store, but just a target itself. Imagine a target. And in the center, that would be your core. So that's where you have to describe yourself in a couple of words. One word is best, but who are you in a couple of words? And then around that center, the closest to your center is who you are most, and the farther out is who you are least. So when you start filling that out, fill that in with all of your ambitions, talents, abilities, things that you love doing, and then see where you're rating. Then compare the two lists. And what you often find is that who you really are is what you're spending least amount of time on.
Well, that's fascinating. I saw a USA Today survey just a couple days ago that 57% of adults over 40 say they're not working in their dream jobs, but then they cite all these obstacles keeping them in their present ones. And I think 27% said financial obligations, 19% not enough opportunities nearby, 15% lack adequate training. You know, they had all these excuses for staying in the job they were in, even though they didn't like it. But
I know. We keep on finding reasons for ourselves to stay in that box. As much as we don't like being in the box, it's comforting.
Yeah.
So, and you don't have to. You know, circumstances are circumstances. I left my IT career, and I haven't worked full-time in IT for a year and a half.
Oh.
And I'm putting together other things in the meantime. So
yeah.
You can do things regardless of where you are. And I'm an immigrant. I came here with $300 in my pocket at the age of 14.
Wow.
So everything really depends upon you and what you make of it.
Yeah, that's for so true. Well, for many of us, fear is the most common negative emotion that holds us back. Through fear, we so often sabotage ourselves. Just how do you recommend we overcome fear?
One of the ways, and I've come to realize this, the process of surrendering, through some spiritual exercises and things that I was going through.
Yeah.
But it's the process of surrendering. What you realize very quickly, as soon as you surrender, and who you surrender to is a reasonable question. So
yeah.
Surrender to yourself. Surrender to God if you believe in God. Surrender to the higher power, energy, whatever. It doesn't really matter. But surrender to that thing which leads you through life. And all of a sudden you realize that the universe is on your side. And I'll give you an example, just so it's not as esoteric sounding. Second City in Chicago is a wonderful institution for improv and community
heard of it.
I finished the 1 year improv program there, and I really enjoyed myself. I highly recommend that to everybody. It's not their professional program; that would be the conservatory. You can go into it after that 1 year program. But I was auditioning for the conservatory, and. This is me trying to get out of my area of comfort.
Yeah.
And I decided to audition for the conservatory program for the musical improv, where you basically have to sing at any moment on stage, depending on whatever is in the scene. And I'm a person who loves to sing. And usually what I've heard from everybody else is, sing when nobody can hear you. So to go out and audition in front of professionals who do this for a living, and do improv while singing was something that really was putting me at quite a significant outside the box thinking.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But I did it. And one of the things that I found, which is a funny story, is I asked what we're going to be doing, and they said we're going to be doing a two-person scene, a three-person scene, and then an exercise in which we'll give you the name of the celebrity, and you have to make up a song for that celebrity. So I said, sure, no problem. Of course, you have to do all that on a spot. And I am, I had a half an hour, so I'm basically sitting there. I'm a poet. I'm a lyricist. So I come up with, a few songs, and I keep hearing in my head, Brad Pitt, Brad Pitt, Brad Pitt. I'm like, whatever, this is bothering me. I'm going to write a song about Brad Pitt. I wrote a song about Brad Pitt. I moved on. So I get on the stage. They tell us what we're going to be doing, and they said the first exercise is we're going to be giving you the name of the celebrity, and you create a song on the spot. So, of course, the name of the celebrity that they pick is Brad Pitt. I am standing there, and I'm laughing. And I'm laughing and thinking, wait a minute, if I'm intuitive, is it really improv? So I go ahead and I do I do my song about Brad Pitt. I nail that part of the audition. The other two I don't do as well on, and I don't get into the conservatory. But point is, I put myself very much in the fear zone. Getting up in front of people, singing, improv, all that stuff. This is not what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
And there you go. The universe just throws you a little thing with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Universe supports you.
True that when people get outside themselves and look to a higher power, the universe, whatever you want to call it, and just don't try to depend all on themselves and say, I'm just not good enough for this, and ask for help. And, outside through prayer or whatever the method you want to use, it's just so miraculous the talent that or the answers that'll come back. And
They always
help
do.
You with that. But I always say that, you know, another thing you can do is think about the worst thing that could happen should you fail and have a backup plan in place. And then, you know, if you can somehow develop a financial plan or something to get you through the next several months or whatever long it's going to be, then you can kind of feel like a millionaire attitude if you're not constantly worried how you're going to pay the bills next month. And that's a big way to go about changing your career, too. But, well, fear of trying anything new goes hand in hand with lack of self-confidence. Can you give us some? I guess you've given us some already. Maybe some more tips to ramp up the self-confidence and belief in yourself so you can overcome those dreaded threats of rejection and discouragement that so many of us have.
Yeah, well, it's I bring it back to this particular you know, phrase. If somebody is talking to you and they're angry at you and they call you stupid, you know, what choices do you have in the matter? You can either agree with them that you are stupid, and then if you agree with them, then what's the point of arguing? You can disagree with them that you are stupid, but then would proving them that you are not stupid, would that be anything that's worth your while? Or third, you can say, well, I'm not stupid. It doesn't really matter what you say because I know who I am.
Yeah.
So it all gets boiled down to the same thing. If you know who you are, it doesn't matter what anybody else is saying. It's all the motivation is from within.
That
you
is so
know
true.
Who you are. And then continue on with it.
Yeah, I think that goes sort of along with the next question is why is it so crucial to recognize who you are today, both your strengths and your weaknesses, in order to make positive changes going forward? And, you know, why not concentrate strictly on the joyful, fulfilled person you seek to become? But I think, you know, unless you recognize your own weaknesses and also your own strengths, it's pretty tough to reach that next level.
Yeah, it's trying to build a bridge, you know, right in the middle of the water. You have to start on some rock, if you will. You have to know who you are. And once you talk to yourself, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but that's really what it is. You talk to yourself. You allow all of your, you know, chatter that's internal to actually rise up and look those little fears in the eyes. You will see, okay, this is what I'm afraid of. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
And all of that is within yourself. And if you go through that process, then you will really understand who you are, why you're here, what you like, what you dislike, and then you can set a course.
Yeah, I like also to go back and think about some of the decisions I made in the past. And, you know, and at this point they may seem wrong, but at the time they seem the right thing to do. But then when you think about it, you can take positive positive feedback from either of two conclusions, that you made mostly right decisions for you in the past, so you can be confident of doing the same thing in the future. But if you made what you now consider a lot of wrong decisions, you know that now you're more mature, you understand yourself better, and you'll make a wiser choice going forward. So I think that, you know, that's another helpful exercise to understand where you are today and how you can be better tomorrow. But,
and just don't blame yourself. We get into this self-blaming game of how dumb was I that I did this.
Oh,
Stop it.
That is so self-defeating. It's just the most destructive thing you can do is sit around and regret the past and blame yourself for what you didn't do or did do.
Accept it, set a course, and do something different.
Well, let's talk about your School of Human Potential. That's fascinating what you said that you're going to have in the next couple of weeks. Tell us a little bit more about that. And
So the idea came to me in 2009 when I wanted to figure out what is my way of contributing to society, because I knew it wasn't programming.
Yeah.
I knew something a little different. And I really thought that we as modern individuals are very, very busy. We're busy, we have jobs, we have family responsibilities, we have so many things that we're supposed to do. There's no time for us to become well-rounded individuals.
That's true.
I thought that's something that needs to change. So we came up with that way of many different courses in the mind, body, and spirit area that encompass things that we should be improving upon. And these are not things that you would learn in school, but these are things that would be, you know, nutrition and fitness and parenting and how to be a better partner and meditation on the spiritual side, financial success, you know, all of the things that really encompass areas where we can fill in the gaps.
Nice.
All of those are available online, or will be once we launch.
Yeah.
All of those are $97 a piece, so we wanted to make it affordable. So,
yeah,
and
it's not exactly going to break the bank for most people.
Yeah, so it's basically the pitch is if you have 8 hours and $100, you really can learn, and we give you those classes for up to a year. So there's no time constraint. You can start today, watch for 10 minutes,
yeah.
Come back next week, continue.
Yeah, and what's the website address on that?
Yeah, the site is live, but this is the beginner site where you cannot really take courses yet. So it's www.schoolhp.com.
And that's where those courses will be in when they're
that's
up and
they
running.
Will. Yep.
Yeah, that sounds really fascinating. And I know you also have a Human Potential Press on that website that you reference various books that are available.
In putting together the School of Human Potential, we realized that some people just won't take classes. Some people prefer reading books and getting their information that way. Some people prefer listening to the radio. So we're creating Human Potential Radio Network, which will be launching in a couple of weeks as well.
Yeah.
It'll be free for everybody to listen to. We have the Human Potential Press, which is our small publishing house.
Yeah.
We'll have.
I notice you can even, if you want to be an author, you can apply for to be published through here.
You could. It's a blended model. It's a mix of traditional publishing with self-publishing. We take the best of both.
That's certainly an opportunity for all you aspiring authors out there who have something to say. Obviously, it has to be
within our wheelhouse.
Potential related within your wheelhouse, like you say. And then I also wanted to mention in 2013 you published that highly acclaimed book of your own poetry called Inspirer, and I think some of the listeners may want to check that out. I know it was fascinating with some of the poems that were in your Amazon preview. Should they go to Amazon for that, or what's the
Yeah, they can go to Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or wherever you like. It's on all of the online partners.
Yeah.
And within the next month or so, we're going to have the second book in the series.
Oh, I see.
So that's going to come out, but that'll be under the Human Potential Press label, also available from our website and then Amazon, Barnes & Noble's all the retail.
Yeah, so people should check that website of schoolhp.com, and they'll find all that stuff then, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have listeners, you have your assignment. Wait a couple weeks and then set aside 8 hours where you won't be interrupted. And your goal is a dramatic, positive transformation of your life. And pray tell, do you have anything more important to accomplish over the next few months? First, go to Alan's website, schoolhp.com, for advice before you start trying to do it on your own. And as we all should know by now, happiness in life is just not just about success in the eyes of others or about how much money or how many possessions you accumulate. And thank you, Alan Weisberg, for your most inspirational message and best of success in your new School of Human Potential and your coaching, teaching, and poetry.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, all of us at middle age want to be happy, but few of us, I fear, really know how to live a happy life. And before I introduce our next guest, I'd like to ask you a hypothetical question. Which of the following two groups of people do you think are happier? One, individuals who 1 year ago won over $1 million in the lottery, or two, folks who 1 year ago had an accident and became paralyzed from the waist down. Surprise, according to studies, both groups of people are equally happy. And that fact comes from our next guest's website. And our guest, Jonathan Robinson, goes on to add, it's not what happens to you that determines your level of happiness. It's your attitude and how you interpret your daily events that really matter. In other words, finding happiness is an inside job, and knowing how to be happy in life is really a skill that partly involves changing your thinking and the way you do certain things. And if you're like the old me, you would respond, that sounds great, but I've been trying for years to think happy thoughts and enjoy my life, but I can't overcome the negative thoughts in my brain and the stress of daily living and worry over what's going to happen tomorrow. But on his website, Jonathan tells us he has some bad news and some good news. The bad news is most books and websites give you lots of information about happiness, but it's normally very, very hard to actually use the information on day-to-day life, and it's easy to get discouraged, as we all know. But the good news, he promises to give you some simple techniques to dramatically increase your level of happiness and fulfillment in under 2 minutes a day. And Jonathan Robinson is a psychotherapist, professional motivational speaker, and a best-selling author of 10 books. He's made numerous appearances on national TV talk programs, including Oprah and CNN, and he has reached over 250 million people around the world, and his work has been translated into 47 languages. And Jonathan's latest book, which was published just this last March, is Find Happiness Now, Shortcuts for Bringing More Love, Balance, and Joy into Your Life. And hello, Jonathan. It's indeed an honor to have you with us here today.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to our exploration.
Well, on your website, you point out that there are two basic approaches to finding happiness, but that one of them doesn't work very well. What are the two approaches, and which one do you recommend?
Well, I actually recommend both, but they really fall into two approaches. The first one is trying to get as much money and control of things in your life so that they're exactly the way you want.
Yeah,
I call that the control approach, and we're all born into that in Western culture. And
kind
you know,
of an impossible task, though, I would think.
Well, everybody else is working against you in a certain way.
Yeah.
Because they're
all
what they
on
want.
their own plan.
So, you know, we're all going to try that approach as best we can, but it has a lot of limitations because there's always something going wrong.
Yeah.
And the other approach is to basically change something in yourself so that no matter what goes on, you have a sense of peace or joy and connection to people that's always available to you.
Yeah, boy, that's the goal that I'd like to accomplish.
Uh-huh.
That inner technology, as you call it. I like that term. Well, at middle age, so many of us are afflicted by a belief system that you label as the as-soon-as approach. As soon as I get my next big raise, or as soon as I lose 25 pounds, find the perfect mate, whatever it is, then I'll be happy. Why does this approach seldom, if ever, make you happy for long?
Well, because the mind always comes up with some other as-soon-as idea. And it never ends, you know.
Well,
whether
that's
you're
exactly right. It's a convenient excuse for why you're miserable. And you can say, well, as soon as this happens, then it's going to be better.
Yeah.
But
it never runs out.
It doesn't really spur you into action now. You're just sitting around waiting for the next as soon as to occur.
And you're always putting off your happiness as a problem so that you never quite get there.
Yeah, that's right. And if you don't change your thinking and start doing things to find that happiness, then I'm afraid the last as soon as becomes a mournful if only.
Right.
If only I'd done this or that years ago, I'd be happy now. And that's the saddest of all realities, I think.
That's true.
You tell us that happiness can be learned and that the best methods can be done right in the middle of daily living, preferably in under a couple of minutes. Can you give us one or two shortcuts to happiness? Like, for instance, how in the heck do you turn a traffic jam or a bad day at work into an opportunity to increase your inner happiness?
Sure. The first thing to realize is that in my book, the Find Happiness Now book, I offer 50 methods, and most of them can be done in under 2 minutes. Right. A lot can be done in under 20 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And the reason that's important is because we're all busy, and the simple things are often the best. And what I encourage people to do is try a bunch of methods and find ones that really work for them.
Yeah.
So I'll give a bunch during this interview, but it may be that the key method for an individual is in the book, and I haven't mentioned it yet. You know, one method certainly changed my life, but there's a lot of methods that have been like good friends. So here's some ideas that people can use. One is once a week, make sure you schedule a favorite activity for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, something that is a real treat. You know, people schedule their work and their doctor's appointments, but they don't usually schedule their favorite, most meaningful activities.
Yeah, I noticed that in your book you said that unhappy people, a great majority of their time is spent doing the things they least like doing, and such a small portion of time is devoted to what they really like to do.
Exactly. So that's simple, and by putting it actually in your calendar that you're going to go for a walk with a friend, or you're going to go backpacking, or you're going to go to a movie you like, whatever it is, then it's much more likely to happen.
Yeah, and that appointment, because you consider that appointment just as important as meeting with your boss to discuss X, Y, Z, or whatever.
Exactly. So that's something you can do. It ends up that acts of kindness increase your level of happiness.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to do that. And it's a win for you. It's a win for the person that you're kind to. And when you get hooked on it, it will make your whole life better. Another thing you can do is something, it's a special mantra or phrase that I find helps people tune into gratitude. And I learned this phrase many years ago. I'd heard of an Indian guru who supposedly had this magical mantra for helping people feel gratitude. I knew that gratitude was really key for feeling happiness, but it's kind of hard to come by in modern day life. So
yeah.
I traveled all the way to India, and finally, 18,000 miles, I get to the guy's ashram, I wait for 5 hours, I got jet lag, I'm tired, but I finally get to talk to him, and I said, "Please tell me your magical mantra for helping people feel gratitude." And in his Indian accent, he says, "Ah, yes, my mantra is the most powerful mantra on earth." And then he leans in to whisper it into my ear. I'm very excited. And he says, "Whenever possible, repeat the following words. The mantra I give you are the words, thank you."
That reminds me of the Carson.
I flew 18,000 miles to get that. Thank you, that's it. And he says, "No, that's it, is the mantra you have been using. That mantra makes you feel like you never have enough."
That reminds me of the cartoons they show when somebody climbs up the top of a mountain and gets advice from some guru like that. But
right,
you went 18,000 miles for it. So.
But the funny thing was, he said, and he gave me a little bit more instruction. He said, "You have to say it for each thing in your life."
Yeah.
And you have to say it a lot, and you have to say it from your heart.
Yeah.
Saying it from your head doesn't do any good. Well,
yeah.
I was pissed off, but I figured I'd travel that far, I might as well use what he said. So,
yeah.
Somebody gave me a cup of tea, and I said, "Thank you." And then I was taking the taxi to my hotel room, and I go out to a taxi, and there's money in my pocket to pay. I said, "Thank you for that." The taxi had air conditioning. I said, "Thank you for the air conditioning." I got to my hotel room, took a shower. "Thank you for the shower. Nice warm water." I got a meal. "Thank you for each part of the meal. I didn't have to kill the meal or grow it. Just give them a piece of the paper and they show up." Yeah, and then there was the internet available. "Thank you that I have the internet." And then my cell phone. I talked to my wife, from India all the way to America. "Thank you for that." Well, within an hour, I had tears of gratitude going down my face because I was finally noticing each of these blessings.
Yeah.
We live better than kings lived 50 years ago. But
yeah, that's right.
If you don't have a simple method for tuning into that, then you miss it all.
So it was worth your 18,000-mile journey.
It actually was worth it, yeah.
And I know in your book, one of the suggestions is you ask yourself, what could I feel grateful for anytime you're under stress or not that happy?
Right. That's another way to tune into gratitude. And, there's a lot to be grateful for, so it's not that hard if you ask yourself that question.
Well, in one of your blogs, you talk about 5 questions for success that you should ask yourself and answer at least once a month to help make better decisions about where and how to spend your time and create the life you really want. What are those questions? Could you run those down for us? Because I thought they were really good.
That's a good question. I'll see if I can remember.
Well, I can help you out because I read the blog yesterday. But
One of the questions is, what are you grateful for? But we talked about that one.
Yeah.
A really interesting question is, how can you use your gifts to better serve people?
Yeah, that's a great one.
And what I like about that is people who use their gifts, might be their ability to be kind or their ability to do something at work or ability to connect with people, whatever it is, if you use that for something, then you'll tend to feel a lot better.
Yeah, I always say, you know, you should use your gifts in helping people. You should do things that you enjoy doing and are really good at, rather than something you detest doing. Like if I was real hesitant about making speeches, I wouldn't volunteer to get up in front of a bunch of people. But maybe I love cooking, so I'd cook meals for the homeless or something. But
Yeah, another one of the questions, I believe, is there anything you're doing that is moving you off track or hurting yourself or others?
Yeah, that's a good question that you should always ask yourself.
You know, when you take stock of that, often there is something, and it's good to be reflective about that. I think another question is something like, what successes have I had recently?
Yeah, that's true. And what small successes have I know that's in your book. What small successes have I had recently? But and I think you also said, what do I do this week to bring more fun and meaning into my life? That's something that you should always ask yourself, I think. You were talking about, of course, scheduling activities like that. But
yeah, in the American cult or culture, we're not really focused on meaning or fun.
Yeah.
And those are two real important keys to happiness.
Yes.
So since the culture doesn't really support it, you have to make sure it's in there.
Yeah.
And asking yourself that question can be a really good start.
Well, many of us, this is another thing that I really was interested in your website. Many of us at middle age attempt to set goals for the remainder of our lives, but then we become discouraged when they're not speedily accomplished. And we commonly, you know, you hear the goals like this all the time. I want to make more money or I want to become wealthy. But as you point out, this, what you call an outward goal, doesn't produce the happiness if it's accomplished at the cost of your time, relationships, and peace of mind. And what's the difference between this outward goal and the balanced goal, that the both internal and external, that you recommend?
Well, with an outward goal, you're trying to get some outward thing. But the only reason we want an outward thing is we think it will translate into getting an inner thing. So money is an example. Nobody wants green pieces of paper with dead people on it.
No.
What they want is what they think money will get them, such as a house. Now, a house also is an outward goal.
Yes.
Why do people want a house? Well, they really want the feeling of security, or they want the feeling of peace of mind or something like that. So I suggest that people create balanced goals where they're going for some outer thing, but they are aware of what they're trying to get with that outer thing. Like if you're trying for a relationship, really what you want is love.
Yeah.
So how can you go about getting love more directly? Some people find love without even a relationship. They find it in their connection with God, or they find it within themselves, or they find it with a dog. You know, so
you can't, they don't have any friends, get a dog.
right. So there's always many ways to the feelings we want, and sometimes you get stuck on just thinking there's one way.
Yeah, that's true. But no, I think it's so important that you go beneath the surface of saying, I want to have a bunch of money, to ask what you do with that money and how your life would be happy and beneficial if you had more money than you did now. And really, what you're only really buying is the choice to do to serve others and to do what you really want to do in your life. And to, for instance, your primary activity is something that you really want to do and not something you have to do because your boss told you to do it. But also, of course, you have to be serving others, because you can never be happy for long if it's all about yourself and accumulating more money and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in your book, I like this too, Find Happiness Now, or in the promo for the book, you contend that the common notion that happiness comes from being successful is all wrong, and what in fact is the more accurate cause and effect?
Well, we're taught by the cult or culture that success leads to happiness, and the studies show that that's not really true, but happiness does lead to success.
Yeah.
Meaning that happy people make about $750,000 more dollars over their lifetime than unhappy people.
Yeah.
They live 9 years longer, they have half the rate of divorce, and they raise much happier kids.
So, in fact, that's why it's so important to define what will really make you happy and to then use those 50 tips you talk about in your book rather than just striving hours and hours to make a lot of money and be, quote, successful and be miserable and end up divorced and your kids
right.
estranged.
Which, unfortunately, is pretty common just because that's the culture teaches us that that's the way to happiness. And
yeah.
I think people are starting to get part of what a midlife crisis is about is when you realize that what you've been fed isn't really that accurate.
Yeah, I've got a lot of what the material things I want, and that's not all that great.
Uh-huh.
Like the old Peggy Lee song, is that all there is?
Right, right.
Well, you point out that most of us crave peak moments in our lives. Why else would we pay $125 admission and stand in line 1 hour for a three-minute ride at Disney World? But how can you and I create moments of joy in our daily lives, both for ourselves and for those around us that we care the most about? What's the secret to transforming the mundane into something special?
Well, first having that intention,
yeah.
because and seeing that it's a possibility,
yeah.
you know, rather than get just caught up in routines.
Yeah.
You know, the only difference between a groove and a grave is a couple of feet. So, you know, last night I hadn't seen my wife for a couple of days, so I cleaned the house, I brought flowers, I had an activity planned, and that made it more likely to have a peak moment than just a night watching TV.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, that's such a worthwhile idea that you plan to have a peak moment or you make circumstances available so that you can have a peak moment rather than just waiting for things to happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously trips, they don't have to be long. It might be a drive to a new spot. It might be going to a place you've never been to before. It might be blindfolding your mate and taking them on a walk. You know, so there's lots of possibilities if you're open to it and you see the need for it.
Yeah, that's it. Well, tell us a little about your latest book, Find Happiness Now, 50 Shortcuts for Bringing More Love, Balance, and Joy into Your Life. How is the book organized? Is it, do I need to read the whole book through cover to cover to benefit? Or how is that set up?
Well, I'm kind of a lazy person, so I set it up that the 50 chapters are all about 3 pages long, and they all deal with how to successfully deal with a certain problem, like how to feel the love inside you, how to connect with somebody quickly, how to lose weight easily,
Ooh.
You know, how to know what you really want, how to get over anger quickly. So you don't have to read the book from start to finish. It's more like find something that interests you, and you'll learn the best method for getting to that destination.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to go to LA from San Francisco, you can go, you know, 300 miles south, or you can go 25,000 miles north. They'll both get you there, but one way is a lot quicker.
Yeah. No, I like the fact that, like you said, you have 50 tips in there, and obviously all 50 are probably not going to work for every person, but all of us can find a few tips that in practice really work and help us. And I like that idea from you talk about, we don't have a lot of time left, but you talk about when you're really stressed out by something externally that happens. I know you talk about a quick method for calming down and getting back into that positive emotion. And that would be very helpful for me, I know, because there's so many things that produce stress if you let them.
Well, there's many methods I give for that. One is to simply, when something stressful happens, to ask what could be good about this.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times good things happen from difficulty, but we don't see it in the moment. So just asking that question can help. There's also, singing a fun song and dancing around, that will tend to move the emotions through you so you don't get stuck in them. There's a lot of ways to deal with stress, including I have like 1 minute meditation to help people calm down. And part of our struggle or job in Western culture is to find that treasure within and therefore be able to give it out to the people we care about.
Yeah, and I noticed in addition to your book, you have another product offer on your website called Deeper Happiness Audio Program. What's this?
What it is I wanted people to have a very simple way to practice these methods so that they would use them in their life. So in the Deeper Happiness Program, they listen for about 10 or 15 minutes a day to an inspiring story and then a simple method for that day. And there's 30 methods for a whole month. And people find that their life is transformed because it gives them something very simple and easy to do each day.
Nice.
And people say that transforms their life because they're actually doing something different. And if you do something different, you tend to get different results.
I notice you offer 3 sample audios on your website. And what is that website address?
The website address is pretty easy. It's findinghappiness.com.
Yeah.
Findinghappiness.com. And, people can put in their email address, and I send them 45 minutes of some of my favorite happiness tips for free. And there's also free articles and videos on the website as well.
Yeah, it's a very valuable website. I got a lot of information off that. And I would definitely recommend going to findinghappiness.com. And thank you so much for joining us, Jonathan. Your book appears to offer the very type of practical, easy-to-implement advice that we like to offer you, our listeners. And I highly recommend you go to Amazon or to Jonathan's website, findinghappiness.com, to preview his book, Find Happiness Now, because what greater gift can you give to yourself and as an inspiration to those around you than sustained happiness in your life? And today's show wraps up our series of programs on the benefits of optimism in your life. And tune in next week when we'll dive into the subject of prayer and the benefits of a spiritual connection with a greater power. And thank you so much, Jonathan, for joining us. Best of success in your book.
Well, thank you so much for the interview. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.